Hi, Marty Hart Landsberg. Welcome to KABU.
Hi, Bill. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Marty Hart Landsberg is a civic treasurer, an emeritus professor of economics at Lewis and Clark College. Even before retiring, he was active in Portland politics with Jobless Justice, where he serves on the executive board and its workers' rights board. He's also an internationally known economist with 6 books, the latest, Capitalist Globalization, Its Consequences, The Resistance to It, and The Alternatives, published by Monthly Review Press. He's written numerous articles on the economy, some published in our local radical paper, Street Roots. Finally, his blog, Reports from the Economic Front, it's a tremendous resource, very accessible, attracted a very large audience. Marty, give us a rundown on the state of the U.S. economy and Trump's recent economic policies, and huge boosts in the military, his tax cuts, and especially his trade policies. First, Marty, though, some perspective. Analysts claim, pointing to low unemployment rates, that the U.S. economy is strong. Is it?
Well, I would say it depends on who you are. People, when they talk about a strong economy, they tend to use 2 indicators. The most common one, I think, is the stock market. And in fact, that's how most people talk about the economy. If there's going to be a tax cut, what did the stock market do? If there's going to be a tariff, what did the stock market do? The fact is that the top 1% own 40% of all the stocks by value, and the top 10% own 84%. More than 50% of all the households have no stock at all. So these market movements mean very little to most workers. And the other indicator you mentioned was unemployment. And that, of course, the rate has fallen to a low of 4.1%, which is good. But the labor force participation rate, the number of workers who are in the labor market, remains incredibly low. And if we were back to the labor force participation rate before the 2007-08 recession, there'd be about 8 million more people at work. Moreover, the job creation over the last 10 years has been very low quality. It's been generally low-paid work with poor or no benefits, a lack of security. I mean, it's true that we've had a very long economic expansion, but it's been one of the weakest in terms of employment growth. It's second weakest in terms of GDP growth. It's the weakest. Productivity is low. Investment is incredibly low. Business has made good profits, but most of it's gone to stock buybacks and dividend payouts and mergers and acquisitions. Very little in the economy to generate good jobs.
Even people in good jobs making a lot of money, they're extremely precarious. Everybody is afraid. It's not just a fragile economy, but jobs come and go and disappear so rapidly, and people feel very precarious about their economic condition.
Yeah, I think that despite the long growth, all the gains have really gone to the top. And even people with what you would think of decent jobs, you know, worry about this. They worry about their health care. They worry about their children. They worry about the quality of schools. There are a lot of reasons to believe that this expansion is going to end within the next year or two. The profit rate, which is the return on every dollar of investment on the part of business, has been declining the last 2 years. We're seeing slower growth in profits. And eventually these are going to start to fall, and then there's going to be a recession that's going to start.
Marty, that's not a very cheerful look at what's ahead. Trump's economic policies, why don't you discuss them, his military policies, his massive tax cuts, and then we can get into trade.
Well, I think the Trump administration has really been highlighted by 3 broad policies. One is these massive tax cuts for business, and secondarily for wealthy people. And while all the attention was on what was happening to wealthy people, the business tax cuts kind of went through without a lot of attention. Business will get a massive cut in their tax rate, a massive cut in the tax rate on their foreign investments, and they're going to be making $3 trillion of extra money over the next 4 or 5 years based on these tax cuts. But the money they get doesn't go into investment. For every dollar that they've invested over the last 5 years, they've put about $3 into dividend payouts and stock repurchases and mergers and acquisitions. So all those things, of course, drive up the portfolios of the wealthy, but do very little, if anything, for the great majority of working people. So I think that what that's going to mean is as the economy slows, the people at the top and the business class is going to be in a better position to adjust for that. As for the huge increase in the military, and we have to realize this isn't just Trump, this is bipartisan. The Congress gave the military more money than even President Trump asked for in his budget. they're going to be boosting the military by about $80 billion, which is more money than every country in the world spends entirely on its military, except for China. And that's just the increase in our military. I think for some of the industries in the industrial sector, they will benefit, of course, by very expensive contracts. But studies have shown repeatedly that spending on the military does the least for job creation and the least, of course, for supporting the needed social services. And these big increases in the military will be accompanied by slashes to social programs, to investment in infrastructure. So while the huge spending on the military and the tax cuts might be kind of a little bit of a Keynesian push to the economy, might extend the expansion a little bit longer, it's not going to make it a strong expansion, and it's not going to leave the economy in a stronger position when the recession hits.
This is your Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Radio. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole. I'm talking to Marty Hart Landsberg, who's a retired professor of economics, still active in the community and Jobs with Justice and many other places. He writes on the economy and his blog reports from the economic front. Marty, we've discussed Trump's huge military budget and his tax cuts for the rich are likely in the not too long run create even more problems for the economy that could get into recession. Tell us, though, right now, let's look at his trade policies.
Well, and here, where I kind of have been most disappointed in what a lot of the trade groups and even how various progressive community has dealt with this. And I think the underlying thing when we talk about the weakness of the U.S. economy, we have to talk about capitalist globalization and how production has been reoriented and reorganized. And that's to start with the fact that I think people are rightly concerned about the huge trade deficit in the United States. Very detailed studies have been done to show that working people have been hurt by the massive imports from China, by the massive imports from Mexico. But of course, these are presented as if these are produced by Chinese firms and Mexican firms, and there's Chinese workers and Mexican workers stealing jobs. The fact is that most of these imports are imports from units of multinational corporations who are selling to other units of the same multinational corporation. I mean, about 50% of all U.S. imports of goods come from one unit of a multinational and go to another unit of the same multinational. And that doesn't even include imports that are coming from sort of captive firms that aren't part of that multinational production structure. So what we've really had is this globalization process that has chipped away at the underlying strength of the U.S. economy, pitted workers against each other, created a huge deficit here in the United States to the disadvantage of working people. And that leads to NAFTA, and it leads to talking about tariffs. President Trump is calling for renegotiating of NAFTA, and there's been a lot of attention on that because people, I think, appropriately understand that these free trade agreements are bad, but they don't really understand how they underpin a huge globalization process that works against working people. So, for example, there's a lot of attention to issues like we don't want foreign companies suing local governments and secret tribunals. Yes, we do not want that. We want to be able to have spending programs that allow us to purchase goods and services from domestic firms. Yes, we do. We'd like to be able to renegotiate periodically an agreement if it's not a good one, of course. But all that attention takes attention away from the fact that treaties like NAFTA have up to 30 different chapters. And while we're focusing on those things, we're not understanding that agreements, for example, that are part of NAFTA will extend the patent length of drugs and keep them more expensive, will allow firms to set limits on what food safety is acceptable throughout NAFTA, determine what regulations are acceptable, block governments from controlling capital flight or banks that get to be too big to fail, the privatization of services. All of these things are built into the agreement and all these chapters. And what we need to see is that you cannot reform these agreements and make them work for the U.S. economy. And that's true even if you put a little tariff on steel or aluminum, which isn't going to make a big difference in terms of the U.S. economy. We need to say no to these agreements and start to think about what we need to do to rebuild the economy. If we don't have these agreements, we don't have to worry about foreign companies suing us. We don't have to worry about whether we put domestic content laws into place that say if you sell a lot of products in the United States, you should have a certain percentage of the value produced in the United States. We don't have to worry about saying if state and local governments want to have a building program, they can use labor and environmental conditions as criteria for which firms they choose. These are all these things that are being blocked by a globalization policy that only benefits large corporations. And I don't see this kind of discussion taking place.
We do, however, it seems to me, have to, just as in the local economy, when they talk about a free market economy, there's hardly a free market as if anything goes. There's rules of the game. And if the government doesn't enforce it, the economy begins collapsing. Like rules against monopoly, which have been relaxed, and in fact we're finding terrible results of that. But there's also fraud, adulteration, all kinds of environmental and food safety rules. To some extent they're being evaded, but they're still absolutely necessary. We just can't allow doctors to hang out a shingle and offer tooth surgeries for the price of one. We do need a set of regulations, or else capitalists will destroy one another and all of us at the same time.
Right, but the problem is that these global agreements set regulations at the lowest level and block national governments from increasing the regulations over that level. So, for example, under food safety, the agreements create a committee that's dominated by food producers that say, okay, genetically modified food, that's perfectly fine. Certain pesticides, insecticides, they don't have health problems. So if a government or a people want to say, wait, we don't think that's right, we want to put a higher regulation on, that's a violation of the agreement because that's blocking fair trade, and those groups have already harmonized the regulations. So what happens is that beyond our backs, these global corporations use these agreements to essentially deregulate, to create the lowest common denominator so they can globalize as they want and essentially limit our ability to democratically decide what do we think is safe. If we don't like factory farming because of health conditions, technical barriers to trade, which is a chapter in NAFTA, will say, I'm sorry, food produced under any condition you might imagine is still the same food. If you try and block that kind of process, you're violating an international agreement.
The current rules create an open field for corporate predation of any kind. And in fact, it supports it by stopping competition from perfectly capable producers through patents and many other restrictions. How would we get to a point where the producers of goods have to follow a set of very stringent regulations as to safety and the environment, as well as labor rights and labor participation in the making of decisions?
Well,
how do we get there?
It's an uphill battle, of course. But I think the first thing we need to do is say no to these agreements, which take decision-making out of our hands into corporate-controlled bodies. And then suddenly we find that we're limited in doing things. The other thing we have to realize is you can't divide domestic from international. You can't have a government that's trying to destroy unions and then imagine you're going to have a global trade policy that's going to protect worker rights. So what we need to do is get out of these trade agreements, which doesn't leave us in a world with no rules. There's the WTO, there's limits on tariffs, there are all sorts of procedures. And we need to combine those people who are concerned about globalization with those people who are concerned about the domestic economy and say, what are we battling? We're battling a corporate globalization process that is undermining working conditions everywhere. So what does that mean? It means we need to see how, as we pursue a domestic policy, we need to start by looking and say, well, what are we importing a lot of? And what are the things we might do to create alternatives to those products right here? Domestic content legislation. If companies are selling a lot here, then they should be producing a certain amount here. We should have social dumping laws where if companies are selling products to the United States in countries where they're using highly exploitative anti-labor, anti-environmental problems, we should be able to put up a tariff to reduce that advantage. But most importantly, we have to say, what should we be doing to shape our own economy environmentally? What about mass transit? How do we engage in urban planning? What are the new energy technologies we need? And then as we think about what we need, then we need to think about what are the international regulations and restrictions and subsidies and tariffs that will make us able to pursue and push through the kind of economic changes we need. Keeping the economy as it is in this highly globalized way isn't going to provide stability. It's not going to provide economic sustainability or environmental sustainability or security for people. And it just participates in creating a world where workers everywhere are facing the same uncertainty.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour talking to Marty Hart Langsberg. We've discussed the U.S. economy and its problems and the likelihood of a recession. We've talked about Trump's economic policies, which will definitely worsen things. His vast spending on the military and the huge tax cuts are just going to enrich the rich further. And then we discussed the need for getting out of NAFTA and all the other international agreements and, in fact, forging a very, very different economic policy for the United States, which would support workers as well as end the threat of environmental destruction, particularly climate change.
Some of the important takeaways here, I think, are that what's really at the root of our problems is this corporate-driven globalization process. The things that are happening to us in terms of the quality of jobs and speculation and trade deficits and insecurity are not accidental. And what we need to do is begin to build power to put a brake, to roll back that. And that starts with saying no to NAFTA and to these other agreements. We need to not see them as reformable because they're not agreements that represent our interests. The other is we have to be starting to think about what are the capacities of a government, whether at the national, state, or local level, that are going to be necessary to restructure and retool our economy. And that's going to mean that we need to begin to think about how do we gain control over finance and direct it where we want? How do we roll back these huge tax increases? How do we strengthen the ability of governments at different levels to actually plan and reconstitute the way our economy functions? All this globalization and celebration of free trade is making it harder for us to have those kinds of conversations.
We need an accountable government, it seems to me. We have to be careful about creating a really big state that becomes accountable only to the powerful.
And I think that what we need to do is be careful that we don't give credibility and legitimacy to those who represent capital and leave people confused and disarmed. And that's why I think some of these negotiations or tariffs on aluminum and steel that will make really no difference to the economy and no difference to jobs, to celebrate them as somehow representing an important step forward, is wrong. And the fact that there may be some reforms in a globalization agreement that shouldn't be celebrated. We should be opposing them. We need to be developing criteria that people can see clearly whose interests are being served. And so this is going to require serious long-term education, but we have to start to bring class back into our understanding of what's happening and to start to draw sharper lines in terms of policy.
Marty Hart Landsberg, thanks so much for talking to us today. Marty, tell us just briefly about your blog and we'll sign off.
So I try and post about once every 7 to 10 days on what I think are important economic trends. And I try and look at the headlines and see the way the media or government is really shaping news and try to help people make sense of what's going on, providing some history and some analysis from a worker's point of view.
Marty Hart Landsberg, keep up the good work.
Thanks, Bill.